Eddie Chavez. Ruben Nava. And Jesse Romero. Jesus 911.
Jesus 911. Eddie, they're trying to go ahead and Skype me and so I can pick it up. But hey, you're on Soul Patrol, Jesus 911, Jesse and Eddie. Eddie, are you 10-8, brother?
I'm 10-8. I'm clear for calls. Just we're reporting for duty, sir.
Yeah, we're 10-8. We're on duty. Okay. Hey, I just want to okay, here comes the Skype. We'll be coming. I just want to mention, Eddie, we got an exciting guest today. I've been, and this is going to have to be a 2 or 3 part. He's going to have to be a recurring guest. It's Dr. Luis Sandoval, medical doctor, psychiatrist. And I'll tell you what I like about him, Eddie. He's a kid from the barrio.
Is that right?
Yeah. He grew up in the neighborhood out there in Orange County and stuff, and he's done well for himself. I'd love to see Mexican-American from the barrio. He's a PhD. Hey, Dr. Luis, are you with us?
Here. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, doctor. Good to have you with us.
Let me give a couple of shout outs so we can just jump into this program. I was in Fresno this week, and I want to thank Christy Villa for inviting me to the Marian Conference. It was a great weekend in Fresno for the Catholics out there. I also want to thank Jose Robledo. He lives out there in Bakersfield. Anytime I fly to California, he drives anywhere where I'm speaking, helps me out on my table, picks me up at the airport. Jose, we can't want to thank you. You're a true trooper, brother. You're a brother in Christ. Thank you very much for all you do for me. And I also want to thank Eddie and Diane this weekend. They were gracious hosts out there in Fresno. They put us up in their home, took us out, had wonderful meals. Great people out there. God bless all of you guys in Fresno. All right, Dr. Luis, Eddie, let's talk.
Outstanding.
Let me just mention one thing before Eddie jumps in here. Dr. Luis, you're a psychiatrist. And you also, you've gone to the Pope Leo XIII Institute. You're trained as a psychiatrist in the medical aspects of healing, deliverance, and exorcism. And you've also, I met you this summer, you attended the Liber Christo Healing, Deliverance, and Exorcism Conference. And you obviously went to the doctor, the medical track. And they're using more of a medical model there to liberate people from the diabolical. And to me, that makes a lot of sense. So my first question, and when Eddie and me will go back and forth on this, is how do you get involved in this ministry here in Southern California of healing, deliverance, and exorcism?
Well, you know, the way I got involved was pretty, when I look at it, you know, God has a plan for everybody, and sometimes God calls you when you least expect it. And so it's interesting the way I got involved. I wasn't looking for it. I hadn't thought about it really or even thought about being involved with it. But interestingly enough, I knew a priest. I was good friends with a priest. I didn't realize he was part of this ministry because usually it's pretty confidential and low-key. And I happened to run into him one day at a restaurant when I had come back to Orange County from all my medical training. I did my training. I went to school at UCLA and did my training in San Diego. And then I moved back to Orange County, and I actually came back to be closer to my parents and back to the old neighborhood. I happened to run into this priest at the restaurant. He said, "Hey, what are you doing now?" And I told him, "You know, I'm practicing psychiatry over here in Orange County." And he just randomly said, "Hey, do you think you could help me out with something?" I didn't know what that something was. And right away, of course, I said, "Of course, Father, you know, like a good Catholic." I said, "Anything you need, Father, you let me know what you need. I'll help you out." And then he just said, "Well, I'm part of the deliverance team here in Orange County, and I need somebody to help me out with psychiatric interviews." And so before I knew it, I had already committed to it. And lo and behold, you know, now I help out here and I do the interviews and I help a lot of people who are really hurting to decide or to be able to decipher, do they really have spiritual conflict or is this more of a psychiatric based illness, which, you know, sometimes it's a little bit of both. And it's important to make that distinction.
Doctor, really quick, what's the history of psychiatric evaluation when it comes to demonic individuals that are suffering from, being afflicted with demons? Is there a long history or is it just recently, or what do you have any idea what that might be?
You know, that's an interesting question that you ask. I think it's a kind of a complex answer because we're so used to the way that our spirituality is expressed here in the United States and California, at least for me here, I can only speak of Southern California. But if you think about it, the phenomenon of possession or diabolic influence or anything along those lines, it's actually worldwide. And I think it's much more accepted in other countries. If you go to Africa, if you go to South America, Latin America, it's very common to speak of these things. And it's not uncommon to say, well, you know, let's distinguish and go to the psychiatrist and go to your priest. And then we get into the dangers of running into, you know, go to the curandero or go to the witch doctor down the street. So I think in other countries, it's always been mixed with different practices. Here in the United States, we're much more conservative about things. We like to be more pragmatic and scientific. And so I would say in the United States, it's not that we don't recognize the phenomenon that are occurring, because when you're diagnosing somebody, you're interviewing somebody, you can't deny what's happening in front of you. You have to objectively look at it. Right. The challenging part, though, is, and what's new and up and coming here is, do we consider diabolic possession as an actual occurrence? And then do we incorporate that into the science? And that's where a lot of psychiatrists are going to be a little hesitant. They're not going to deny and say, wow, well, yeah, this person is really reacting to something. And when you look at the differences of how somebody who reacts with just mental illness, say a psychosis, versus somebody who's reacting to something and you realize they're not psychotic. This is something out of the realm of what we're used to in diagnosing. But are we ready to call this a spiritual influence? And that's where some people are a little hesitant.
Okay, interesting.
Doctor, what was it easy or difficult to reconcile your psychiatric training and background with your Catholic faith, especially as it relates to the diabolical? I mean, were you going through like cognitive dissonance when you entered into this ministry?
You know, initially it was hard because I'm being a psychiatrist, I'm also a bit of a skeptic. A lot of people, you know, in our culture, a lot of people want to attribute everything to, oh my goodness, you know, as a diablo, you know, it's the devil who's affecting me, or, you know, it was a
especially out there in the barrio, right?
Oh yeah, especially out there, you know, you're more ready to go to a witch doctor or curandero than you are to a doctor, you know, to a medical doctor. So it's not uncommon for us to refer to spiritual influence. But as you're trying to study and as you learn more psychiatrically, I think you become more skeptical. I swung the other way completely in my studies, where I thought, no, nothing spiritual at all. It's got to be, there's always going to be a psychiatric, scientific explanation for it, because now I know better, or so I thought. And then, you know, you continue to mature in life and you realize, well, it's not either or. You know, there's a both and component there, where, yeah, it can be both psychiatric and spiritual, because as I matured and I realized in the faith, well, we're body, mind, and spirit, and body, mind, and spirit are all happening at the same time. We like to separate it out, but I give the example to some people who are skeptical, and I say, well, you know, if you hurt your leg and you're in physical pain, emotionally you're not going to feel good either. And so there's a whole connection there. I can't say that there's physical pain independent of being upset or angry or down or having an emotional component. That's linked. So why wouldn't the soul also be linked? But we just don't always incorporate that, because in the scientific world, there's a hesitancy to speak of spiritual things.
Hmm.
Eddie.
Doctor, real quick, this is a side question that I just thought of here. What, for example, what might be the most challenging doctrine or dogma that appears to interfere with a proper and accurate initial evaluation of somebody? So what is something that you might encounter that is kind of challenging for you to distinguish between one or the other, or how does that work?
That's a great question, Eddie, because we see, so this is where it gets interesting, because I see a lot of patients who will feel that they are spiritually afflicted. They come and they have a lot of signs where they're telling me things where I'm like, wow, so you're hearing voices and you hear it's the devil and they're telling you to do this and that. Right. But then all of a sudden I find out that they are on drugs and they're using methamphetamine, or they have used methamphetamine in the past. And so they can see a lot of things or experience a lot of things that, for somebody who's never been on drugs, I would say, yeah, this might be something very spiritually linked. But then all of a sudden you throw in the component of drugs, or you throw in the component of somebody who's schizophrenic, and that, even just within the scientific world, can blend between the drug use, schizophrenia, throw in bipolar. So this is where you really have to make the distinction. You know, this is where I don't jump to, oh, everything's spiritual right away. It's nice to say, okay, let's go through all the criteria for schizophrenia. Let's go through the criteria for bipolar disorder. Make sure that none of these things are influenced. Are you on any drugs? A lot of people also think that, oh, you know, I'm not on drugs. They say I'm not on drugs, but then they don't consider marijuana to be a drug. And marijuana has shown worldwide to cause psychosis as well. So I hope this answers your question, but one of the hard things to decipher and to distinguish is this really a mental illness? Is there an influence of drugs? Is there an influence of personal family issues going on? You know, did somebody just have a loss, or are they going through a divorce or something very difficult for them? And are they attributing this to spiritual influence, which is very common?
Doctor,
the flip side.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, just very quickly. The flip side is sometimes people want to completely ignore the spiritual, right, and they want to just focus on, you know, it's because of this. It's because I don't have a good boss. It's because I, you know, everything else. There's every other excuse. And I, after a while, come to the conclusion and ask them, you know, do you think this could be spiritual? Because nothing else is going to work here.
Right, right. Doctor, one of the follow-up questions is, I recently had an interview with an individual that was I think he was currently on drugs. He was trying to say it was 3 months ago, but he was currently on drugs. And the type of the drug they used, you know, having a background in law enforcement, you understand the things that are used to cut the drugs to extend the life and income that comes from the sales of the drugs. So when we come back from the break, I want to ask you, does some of the toxins used to cut these drugs, because I've heard of formaldehyde, I've heard of different things that you would not want in your body if you knew they were there. So let's examine that when we get back from the other side of the break. Ladies and gentlemen, Jesus 911, we're talking with Dr. Luis Sandoval, and we will be right back on the other side.
Welcome to our January 11th, 2020 Spiritual Warfare Conference. Every year without fail, this is our most popular, well-attended event. This year's Spiritual Warfare Conference will host Adam Bly, a Catholic demonologist and an auxiliary member of the International Association of Exorcists, along with Dr. Luis Sandoval, a psychiatrist who's part of the Healing, Deliverance, and Exorcism team for the Diocese of Orange. These two gentlemen bring tons of experience and expertise in the area of spiritual warfare. This is going to be a high-information Catholic seminar. I'll be there as well, sharing some riveting stories on the diabolical and liberation found through Jesus Christ from my best-selling book, The Devil in the City of Angels. Mark your calendars, come and join us, and meet other radio hosts from Jesus 911. Contrary to popular belief, spiritual warfare is not demon-centered. It's Christ-centered. Come join us and learn how to armor up and fight the good fight of faith. Catholics, wake up. Don't hit the snooze button. Join us at St. Christopher Catholic Church, 629 South Glendora Avenue, West Covina, California, on January 11, 2020. See you then. Strength and honor in Jesus' name.
Jesus said in Luke 17, "When you have done all that you were ordered to do, say, 'We are unprofitable servants. We have only done our duty.'" According to St. John of the Cross, God is pleased with the little deeds we do in secret. He takes more pleasure in these than in a multitude of grand works that we may do out of the desire to be seen by others. May God help us to do the things that please Him, and not just to appear great in the eyes of others.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Soul Patrol 10-8, John 3-6 in our call letters. We're open for service. We got a three-man car. We got two retired street cops, and we've got a doctor in the back seat. And the doctor is in the house. His name is Dr. Luis Sandoval. And, Doc, you know, I want to answer Eddie's question real quick. I mean, drugs, exorcism, mental illness. I mean, does that have, is that part of the mix? Do you find that drug addiction, drug usage is part of the mix with mental illness, possible spiritual affliction? Is that always?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think that it's all mixed together. I mean, Eddie, you bring up a really good point. You know, what are people putting in these drugs? And I don't know if either of you saw the series. There's a TV show about, I don't necessarily want to mention the name, but a TV show about some guys cooking meth out in the desert in New Mexico. It was a pretty riveting TV show. But one of the episodes that caught my eye on that is, you know, in order to make methamphetamine, they were picking up the products at the hardware store. So it was like paint thinner and, you know, pretty much gasoline, something. I don't know what they were putting in there, but they're putting a whole lot of bad stuff in these drugs. Why not be able to put curses on drugs? Why not be able to put other things in there as well? So, you know, you're putting something physically in your body that's not healthy, that's poison, essentially, and that's going to affect your brain. It's going to ruin your brain. But I've had a lot of patients who feel that, you know, when they're using the drugs, they also feel, they recognize that it's sinful, and they feel that something else is affecting them. Something spiritually might be affecting them at the same time. Why can't we have drugs come in and bad spirits come in at the same time together when we know we're doing something that we're not supposed to, and especially if it's going to alter our mind?
Right.
Very Dr. good. Luis, I've talked to several exorcists at Liber Crystal and other places, and they say that virtually every person that they've dealt with that's possessed, generally speaking, they also have a history of drug usage. In other words, they say that's a portal that opens the door to the diabolical, is the drug addiction. But let me go to your wheelhouse here, to something that, you know, I want to just ask you a personal question. Are you an anomaly in your profession, or have you found maybe a few other believers in your field of psychiatry and psychology, or you're just kind of stand out there as somebody with a tinfoil hat in the corner?
I think I wear the tinfoil hat for now in my end of the world.
So you're a minority in your field, as you say. Yeah.
I'm a minority within the minority of the field, because even within the medical field, psychiatry is actually up and coming. You know, a lot of people don't realize that. We talk about it a lot and hear things, but you know, when you're in medical school, it's not the most popular choice. So, I mean, I'm lucky. I did actually a training in both family medicine and psychiatry. So that was, it was kind of like, okay, that's cool. It makes sense, because every time you're doing family medicine, you know, if general practitioners recognize that there's some emotional elements going on with patients that they can't always get to because they're busy treating, you know, diabetes and thyroids and cholesterol. And they realize that there's an emotional component, so they refer a lot to psychiatry. But when you're training in medical school, it's not something that's very common or something that's very supported. Well, I shouldn't say supported. It's supported. But, you know, everybody, the glory, the popularity goes to being a surgeon, being a specialist. You know, in the medical world, that's still very popular and very well sought out and looked on by society. Psychiatry is up and coming. And then on top of that, psychiatry, it's a good science, and we're trying to get more scientific than it used to be. But then within the realm of psychiatry, the idea of spirituality, spiritual influence, and especially anything, say, diabolic, that's really, really a minority. So where I am, I can say that I've had a few therapists who I work with who, you know, therapists don't necessarily prescribe medications or anything along those lines. They do a lot of therapy. But I've had a few of them come to me specifically because they do know that that I am Catholic and that I do believe in the spiritual world. And they come up to me and they say, hey, I need to run something by you because I've been treating somebody and then these issues came up. I didn't know what to do about it. It sounds like this is spiritual or a spiritual influence. What do you think? And so they actually come in, and those are the moments where I think, you know, sometimes it can be lonely out there, but those are the moments where I feel like, okay, good. I'm, you know, we're doing something that can actually help people, and it reassures me that that's right. There is a spiritual component even within the psychiatric world.
Eddie,
Doctor, do you know that the DSM now mentions demonic possession in this medical book? Can you explain first maybe what the DSM? Just give a quick summary of that, and then tell us if
The DSM is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual for Psychiatry. And what that means is that's the book that holds all the diagnoses that we can possibly attribute to people, whether it be depression, anxiety, bipolar. If you read the DSM, that's where we get the criteria from. So how do I know somebody, say, has bipolar disorder? Well, I go to the section on bipolar disorder, and I see a list of, say, 9 possible symptoms. And if somebody has 7 out of 9 or 5 out of 9, depending on the situation, you know, you read the different symptoms, and you say, oh, okay, then this person does qualify for this diagnosis, and we have to treat appropriately. So there is a section called dissociative identity disorder. And where we normally see dissociative identity disorder, the classic is, say, somebody who's gone through some personal trauma where there's life or death. Unfortunately, somebody who was raped, or say a soldier who's been out in the war. And a lot of times we say, oh yeah, you know, for the soldiers, it's PTSD. Everybody understands post-traumatic stress disorder. They went through a stress. But while they're going through that stress, sometimes they can actually, the mind in a sense can separate, or they say, gosh, I saw what was happening, kind of like I was floating above the situation and I could see everything from the outside. And so we say that the mind dissociates or separates itself from the moment in order to not be so shocked or absorb the trauma all at once, because it's a very traumatic life or death situation. Within that section of dissociative identity disorder, then that's where we can say, well, geez, you know, somebody who looks like, say, that they're possessed and that they're experiencing their body moving without them really wanting to move it themselves, or they're no longer in control of their thoughts, or a psychiatrist will tell you know, yeah, I heard a different voice or something along those lines. Then they say, yeah, this person is disassociated. It's no longer them in that moment. And there's even a subcategory within dissociative identity disorder. It's called dissociative trance. And so the dissociative trance, those are the diagnoses that I rely upon if I'm meeting somebody or see somebody and they actually do have some kind of a spiritual conflict. When I volunteer for the church and I interview, then those are the diagnoses that I can attribute and say, you know, this is something spiritual. What I'm observing scientifically is a dissociation. I'm observing a dissociative trance. So this is not uncommon. Like I said before, it's a worldwide phenomenon, because we see in different cultures the idea of possessions or being dissociated due to spiritual origin is very common. The question here is not whether or not it's happening, is can I attribute this to a demonic possession? Can I attribute this to a spiritual influence? And that's where, you know, that's not necessarily something that a psychiatrist is comfortable saying, but then we have to ask ourselves, well, what kind of treatment do we give this person? You know, how are we going to get them better? Because what's the origin of the dissociation?
Doctor, I read somewhere that this is kind of a progressive understanding of multiple personality disorder. What's the relationship there between the two?
So that's true. Some people will have what we call multiple personality disorder, or, you know, that's the common term for it. But the idea is that the person can have a split mind. And before, we used to call it schizophrenic. Schizophrenia is a little bit differently. Schizophrenia has hallucinations and delusions. A split mind is more, split personality is where you have different personalities showing up in different times, and sometimes you're speaking to one personality or sometimes another. This is where it can get a little bit tricky, because if all of a sudden you think about demonic possession, and the manifestation of evil would be all of a sudden a whole different entity, because when we look at evil, it's personified. These are persons, you know, the angels, even though they're fallen in nature, but we still consider them a type of person. And so if somebody does have some kind of influence in them, this person can come out. And now you're speaking to a whole different entity, and this is where people get in trouble, because they don't realize that I better not be speaking to a demon, because that's a whole other world that only a priest and a trained exorcist should really get involved at that point.
And so, sometimes, doctor, I mean, by default, people like yourself, a psychiatrist or Catholic therapist, when they're treating some of these people and they still don't know that they're energumens possessed, they're talking... If the person starts talking Greek or Latin to them without studying any of those languages, they're actually talking to the demon without even knowing it, you know, initially. And I guess that's at that point where they say, okay, maybe we need to refer them to somebody in the Catholic Church. So now that I heard you say what you just said, so you would probably definitely agree that there's a medical basis for possession and the use of exorcism. This is not just something that we believe in by faith. This is something that the medical community, based on the DSM and based on that identity, DID, dissociative identity disorder, this is something that is starting to be accepted by the medical community. Is that correct?
This is, yeah, it's true. So, see, exactly right. Jesse, you're absolutely right. There's the, like I said, there's the idea of the phenomenon or the observance of the phenomenon, and we say, yes, this is happening. But then the question is, well, what do we do about it? Because we got to help this person. This person's obviously in pain. People might not jump right away to, oh, this is spiritual, so they should go to a priest. You know, as a physician, you want to treat, and you think, what medicines do I have that can treat some of these symptoms? On the other hand, you look at this and you realize, no, this isn't, this is beyond, the medication is not working. You know, this person is still experiencing this. They really are experiencing this, and it's beyond therapy or it's beyond medication. So if you look at different things, there are different articles, there are different books out there. I know that we've talked about these, but if anybody's ever seen there's a special that was, I believe, on Netflix. It was called The Devil and Father Amorth. And in that special,
yes,
they actually have this great section where, you know, this gentleman is videotaping an actual exorcism on a person who's possessed. Father Amorth, of course, was the, you know, rest in peace, was the head exorcist of the Vatican. You know, so obviously the head exorcist worldwide at that point. And they take this video, the gentleman who made this documentary takes this video, and he goes to experts. He went to the expert in neurosurgery at UCLA. He went to another physician in Israel, and he showed them the video, and he asked them, well, what do you think of this? So obviously we're getting a medical perspective from, say, physicians here, not even psychiatrists yet. And they said, you know, this is amazing. This is, you know, I don't know exactly what to make of it. And they asked him, well, would this be something medical? And they said, I've never seen that. I wouldn't know how to, like, this is really happening, but I wouldn't know how to treat it. Interestingly enough, then he goes to the experts at Columbia in psychiatry. He talks to a lot of psychiatrists. And so they do recognize, and they say, yeah, this is medical. This is something that we need to do. How do we treat it? Well, they realize in the medical world, sometimes we explain things by, say, like, you know, you've heard of the term placebo, where somebody gets a medication, but it's not really a medication. They think they're getting a medication, they're going to get better. So sometimes they say, well, if this person feels that they're experiencing spiritual influence, then we're going to have to send them to somebody spiritual, because that's how they believe they're going to be cured or liberated or treated as well. So they're recognizing that, yeah, we have to do something about this, but what's the right modality to do it? And once we see that we're in over our heads, or this is outside of the medical realm, yeah, why not? Then you have to refer them to a priest. You have to refer them to somebody. And that is actually the medical solution, because for a medical solution to happen means that there's an illness and there's a treatment, right? So that's what we call medicine. We recognize illness and treatment. If we come to the conclusion that, you know, this is a medical illness, it's being caused by demons, we have to send them to the priest. Whether I believe it's being caused by demons or not, it's kind of irrelevant, because
Dr. Luis, hold that thought, Eddie.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back on the other side. We'll let Dr. Luis finish his answer on that.
Ernesto from Long Beach.
You know, I just wanted to comment, you know, and I just wanted to thank you guys. And I kind of wanted to encourage people that are listening, maybe that are not donating, you know, because honestly, I got to be honest, I used to think you guys were a little
too over the top,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You
That's
know,
right.
If God gave us a lot, you know, and I have the blessing of listening to all this, and I just want to call all the people, you know, I got 5 kids, you know, and I don't make a lot of money, and I'm still donating to you guys.
God bless you, brother. You're amazing.
We have to do this. We have to do the extra. And it's not even the extra. People see it like it's extra. Kneeling for communion, saying your rosary, saying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. It is not extra. It's what the church tells us to do.
Amen. You're a good man, brother.
30 years old, 29 years old, 5 kids, and I thank you guys. But everybody else, man, get on fire. Fight for the truth, man. I know what I'm telling you guys. There's
I
so
love
much
it.
Out there.
Genesis 1:27 says, God created man in his own image. Male and female he created them. According to Pope St. John the 23rd, it is not true that some human beings are by nature superior and others inferior. All human beings are equal in their natural dignity. May God help us to look upon everyone as a person created in his image and likeness, and treat everyone the same without favoritism or prejudice.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, we're back. We're 10-8. We're clear for calls. And we have Dr. Luis Sandoval that we're talking with here. Doctor, one of the questions that we wanted to ask you was about your opinion on an article we sent you that was authored by Dr. Richard Gallagher. Are you in line with what he's saying in that article?
I read his article, and from what I recall, he's right. I mean, he's talking about how he sees things, and he has to recognize that. I think he concludes the article with a person is in pain, and ultimately, he's right. This is what we recognize. Somebody comes to us. We're healers. We're doctors, and people come to us because they're in pain. There's a change in their life. Something's different. Something doesn't sound right. And ultimately, it's up to us to decipher what are the limits that I can do to heal this person. Because somebody's coming to me and they want all of a sudden, let's say somebody comes to me and they say, gosh, I think that my arm is not my arm and I want you to cut it off for me. Well, I got to take a step back and ask myself, what's this person thinking? Where are they at? You know, something's obviously not right because I see something differently so I can help guide the person. But if somebody comes to me and I recognize that, you know, they believe that they're being influenced by something or they don't know it. And I see that this is beyond what I know. I need to really pay attention to that and realize that, you know, people are being afflicted by things that are beyond the realm of our knowledge of medicine. We don't know. We know what we know, you know, and there's more to learn out there. So I think it's important to have an open mind and recognize that there are different things that people are going to be afflicted with that aren't necessarily delineated in our medical books. And then find the appropriate healing, which is why, like, you know, Jesse, you mentioned the Liber Christo system and the Liber Christo conference that we attended. And it's so important because really it takes the medical model into approach. And when we look at Jesus, Jesus was a healer. And so whenever we heal, it has to be a medical model. And the nice part about Liber Christo is that it addresses it from the point of view of treatment and right authority, meaning that who's the correct surgeon, who's the physician to do this, and ultimately with a goal of healing, because that's what medicine's all about. This is spiritual healing. This is healing in a realm that we don't see. And so that's why Dr. Gallagher's article is really interesting to see. You know, the psychiatrist, he recognizes that, yeah, we do have to have this healing, and we have to make that distinction between what's in the psychiatric realm and what's in the spiritual realm.
Yeah, I'm gonna ask you some questions about Liber Christo. Let me just ask something else regarding the founder of Liber Christo, Father Chad Ripperger. You know, he's like you. He's an academic. He's written a thick book. It's called The Introduction to the Science of Mental Health there. And he has a large section there on the diabolical on that book. It's like, it looks like some type of medical journal that you probably has to study. You had to study for medical school. Has that book been helpful to you as a psychiatrist to understand some of the deeper things about the soul, the spirit, maybe some things that are not addressed in the DSM? Has Father Ripperger's book or his videos, have they been helpful to you as a medical doctor?
Oh, it was a godsend. That's actually, you know, interesting. Before I was asked to be on the team here in Orange County, I started listening to Father Ripperger, his YouTube videos and whatnot. More from an academic perspective, I know a lot of people have curiosity about this, but being a big nerd myself, I had this academic bent on learning about it. And he really presented it in a way that was methodical. And I thought, wow, I've never heard this approach to, you know, exorcism, spirituality, and the soul before in such an academic way. And so it really piqued my interest. And so once I started hearing his talks and when I read his book, it made a whole lot of sense because he's coming at it from a Thomistic approach, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas. and he's looking at it from elements of grace and virtue, and it made 100% sense, because what's really, how are we going to heal the soul? Sometimes, yes, we can say, oh, a kind word will make somebody feel better, or we think about making people feel better, and feelings are great, but even in my psychiatric profession, I'm challenging people on their feelings all day long. You know, you might feel one way, but what's really happening? And so he really took that, and he said, it made me think of, well, the soul can feel happy or sad, but are we really close to Christ? Because if you look at it, you know, somebody can suffer. The saints suffered, and they were happy because they were close to Christ. And when we're healing the soul, what we're really saying is, how do we get this person closer to Christ? Because Christ is the ultimate healer. And we're going to do that through virtue. That's our medicine. That's our treatment plan. You know, we're going to do virtue. We're going to follow the commandments. We're going to follow a Catholic model. How can that not make sense? I thought it was wonderful.
Well, let me ask you, let me jump in real quick before Eddie asks the next question. What was different between what you were taught at the Liber Christo healing, deliverance, and exorcism training? What was different from maybe what you learned at the Pope Leo XIII Institute? Or is it the same?
So in the summertime, I went to the, the Mundelein Seminary is where they have the Pope Leo XIII Institute. And what I went to was actually their track for the laity. Every summer they have a one-week conference there at the Pope Leo Institute. So I didn't train with priests per se, but what was different was the idea was the same. You know, we're going to go to healing. The difference, and what I really appreciated as a physician, given the Liber Christo model, is that Father Ripperger really has a medical model, in the sense that while he's not prescribing medication like he would pick up at the pharmacy, he is prescribing medication in the form of a prayer prescription. And he has a very methodical way of saying, okay, this is how we're going to get you better. We're not going to jump into an exorcism right away, because we don't even know if you need that. So it's kind of like he's smart in that he's saying, I'm not going to perform surgery on you right away. Let's go to physical therapy by doing your prayers. You know, let's go ahead and take over the counter, like take your Tylenol, take some ibuprofen in the form of practicing virtues, in the form of following the commandments, you know, follow the sacraments. Those are your basic medications that, as we all know, we usually get better right away with that alone, without needing intervention or surgery, if I'm going to make that comparison. And then if all that's not working, if finally we have some kind of a cancer that's just growing and we can't get rid of it, of course we're going to go to surgery. But we don't know that it's a cancer just yet. Let's start methodically and medically and recognize that as Catholics, what's going to help the soul is following Christ, following the precepts of the church in the form of prayer, penance, sacrifice, the sacraments, you know, and that's what gets the soul healthier. And having that medical bent and that medical thought really made a whole lot of sense.
Eddie?
Interesting. Doctor, there's a book also entitled Glimpses of the Devil. This is by Scott Peck, MD. And he talks a little bit about a psychiatrist's personal accounts with possession, exorcism, and redemption. Are you familiar with that book, and what can you tell us about it?
I am familiar with the book. It's a good book, and it's you know, it makes you kind of like he's saying kind of what I was saying before, where once you're treating somebody, you start getting glimpses of something where you recognize that, you know, this is beyond psychiatry. Something else is happening here. We have this term in psychiatry called gestalt, you know, and it's not just a psychiatric term, it's a German term, but what it really means is you get a feeling, and it's kind of like, you know, when you're with somebody in the same room, sometimes you can walk into a room and you can see somebody and you already know that they're anxious. How do you know? You just know. You get a vibe, right? You get a feeling. You get kind of just a sense of it. And we have to do that a lot in psychiatry, which is why it's important that we meet the person, we're in the same room with the person, we get a feeling of their vibe, their aura. So once we start treating somebody, you know, we're looking for certain things, like we were talking about in the book with the DSM, the different diagnoses. I'm looking for a vibe from that area. You know, is there a depression going on? Is there anxiety going on? And of course, all these things mix in together. But then once I've exhausted everything that I know in there, I'm sitting with a person and I'm getting a whole different vibe. Is there a vibe of something that's making the hair on the back of my neck stand up? You know, is this something that I think this person needs to go into the hospital for? And that's where you kind of start getting glimpses of, you know, this isn't just psychiatric. This is something a little bit beyond the realm of the physical, of the mind. This is now in the realm of the spirits. And we need to observe that, look at that and say, well, what's the appropriate approach now? You know, and it's beyond my scope, obviously. And I hope that we're able to recognize that and refer them to their pastor, to their church. And I think that that's where a lot of people sometimes get in trouble, because sometimes we want to be Superman. But we really need to recognize this is a limit, and we really need to send this person to the right authority.
You know, a lot of Avenger Catholics, you know, they mean well.
Yeah.
A lot of them, they mean well. They're pious people. But again, you nailed it, doctor. They just don't know their lines of authority because they've never been taught. They don't do it maliciously. They've just never been taught. Eddie, you want to follow up?
No, I just want to say that we in law enforcement have a similar feeling, and we label it a hunch. We had a hunch about somebody. You stop somebody, and you get this suspicion that begins to grow on you, and you act on that. So I think it's similar in that regard.
It's identical. You're absolutely right, because we have to use our intuition a lot, and that intuition, we call it an intuition. But if you think about it, where does intuition come from? You know, we don't have like a switch in the brain for intuition.
Right.
I believe that intuition sometimes has a spiritual bent to it, where God is speaking to us,
yes,
you know, and letting us know something's going on, and you kind of got to pay attention to that.
Yeah, I agree.
Doctor, there's another book I've read out there. It's called True or False Possession by Dr. Jean Lermerti, and it's put out by Sophia Press. He's a neurologist. Are you aware of this book? He kind of talks about how to distinguish the demonic from the demented. Are you aware of this book, and how would you, to a lay audience, us here, lay people, how would you distinguish the demonic from the demented?
So I am aware. I have that book on my shelf.
All right.
It's a good,
all these books that I refer to, you have them.
I have them, yeah. There's not that many books on this out there, so that's why it's interesting to have them, and it's nice to get different people's perspectives. But you ask a really, really good question. So at the end of the day, how do I make that distinction? Where does that hunch come from, or where does that gestalt come from? I can give you an example. I had a patient one time who was hurt and was hurting inside, and they had anxiety. And, you know, it's not that – obviously, if you're going to be influenced by something negative, you're naturally going to have anxiety, or you're naturally going to feel depressed. So these things overlap. So how do I make this distinction? Well, you know, if your anxiety only comes on at 7 p.m. at night, you got to ask yourself, well, what are you doing at 7 p.m.? So the rest of the day you're doing okay. You're kind of getting through the day. But come 7 p.m., all of a sudden there's some kind of an anxious feeling, no matter where you are, what you're doing, what's happening. It's odd. That wouldn't be scientific. We don't see that. That wouldn't be a good diagnosis to say, oh, this person
hold on, doctor.
Anxiety.
Hold on, doctor. I hate to stop you right there, but hold on. We'll finish that answer on your way back. Ladies and gentlemen, Jesus 911, stay right with us. We'll be right back after this short break.
Welcome, Daniel. You're on the line. What's on your mind, brother?
Hi, I just wanted to share a testimony about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. I had a buddy at work who, you know, he's a lukewarm Catholic guy, and I wanted him to start listening to the Terry and Jesse show, so I kept telling him to download the app, and he kept putting me off. So one day, I grabbed his phone, and I downloaded the app for him. I went on vacation, and you know, I kept telling him to listen to it. He was kind of put me off. I came back from vacation. He comes to my cubicle and he says to me, hey, man, I've been listening to Terry and Justin's show and it's great. And it's made a big impact in his life. The guy, he's going to weekly adoration a couple times a week. He goes to the mass in the morning. Mm-hmm. He's an on-fire Catholic, and he promotes the Terry and Jesse show and the Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Wow. Daniel, what a testimony. And I want to encourage our listeners to get those cards by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and do what Daniel's doing. Go out and spread the faith by inviting people to listen to Virgin Most Powerful. Daniel, thanks for your testimony, brother. God love you.
You're welcome.
It's 11:44 says, consecrate yourselves and be holy, because I am holy. St. Vincent Pilate said, you must be holy in the way God asks you to be holy. God does not ask you to be a Trappist monk or a hermit. He wants you to sanctify the world and your everyday life.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Soul Patrol two-man car. Well, three-man car. We got Dr. Luis riding with us. We're out there on Soul Patrol giving out some good Catholic briefing, Catholic intel. Put all this stuff in your war bag and go out there and evangelize and change the world. I just want to mention that this Saturday I'm going to be in Lowell, Massachusetts, speaking at the Hope Conference. That's at Lowell, Massachusetts. And next week on Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be in Santa Maria, California, October 8th and 9th, Santa Maria, California, speaking at St. Louis de Montfort Catholic Church. We got Dr. Luis Sandoval, and we were asking you if you can parse the distinguish, in a layman's terms, how you distinguish between the demonic from the demented. And that was basically what a book called True or False Possession attempted to do in that book.
Yeah, so I was mentioning a story of a patient who I saw. And one of the interesting things is this. If somebody has, say, psychosis or schizophrenia, they're not going to have it at particular times of the day. It's going to be, it's a condition throughout. It's kind of like having somebody have diabetes. You know, they have diabetes all day long, not just in the morning or at night, and we have to regulate it. It's the same thing with mental illness overall. The challenge comes sometimes when we talk about drug use, and of course, if somebody is using drugs at a particular time of day, they're going to obviously have mental influences or appear to be psychotic or something at the time of the drug use. But I saw this one patient who every night around 7 o'clock, 7:30 would get anxious and would get really worried and would start feeling something internal change, and they were saying something negative. And, of course, I did the battery, I did the drug test, and they were completely clean. And we did multiple drug tests on this person. I went through all the criteria in the DSM for any kind of psychosis or depression or anxiety. And, of course, while they were experiencing this, they kind of met criteria for anxiety. But the rest of the day they were fine, which is an odd phenomenon at that point. And she was very spiritual, but she told me how sometimes she would go to a witch doctor on the side just because, you know, her mom advised her to, and every once in a while she would do it. So I just told her, you know, I advised her, I said, if you're feeling this kind of affliction and it seems to kind of happen every night at this particular time, God, you know, instead of going to witch doctor, why not go to your pastor or whatnot, because you're going to witch doctor for spiritual healing, try going to your pastor. And she was a very nice Hispanic lady, and she was very humble, and she said, you know, okay, I'll try that. And, you know, she was very innocent in the way she was describing her symptoms. I had no reason to believe she was lying or anything along those lines. And so she tried it, and she actually went to a very, very nice priest, who told her that he was worried about whatever this witch doctor was doing for her. So she stopped going to the witch doctor. He said some prayers over her, and she said that after about 3 to 4 months, it all went away. You know, she didn't take any medication. She didn't go to any therapy other than the priest. Now, a lot of people might say, oh, well, it was a power of suggestion, or, you know, she believed that the priest was going to make her feel better. That's why she got better. And, you know, I can't say either way, but what I can say is she got better going to the priest. So why is that not a treatment modality? And really what you're asking is, how do we make that distinction? The distinction is mental illness is consistent. You know, it doesn't occur on occasion, and you don't see a phenomenon like we've seen on the news. There have been some well-documented cases. There was a case in Indiana where kids were crawling up the walls, and even the medical staff saw that, and they didn't know what to make of it. But they can't deny that they saw it. And so that's really where you make those distinctions. You don't have to get to the point where somebody's levitating or crawling up the walls. But if you just start to notice that this doesn't fit the pattern of a mental illness that's consistent or does not meet all the criteria, and the person's still obviously afflicted and genuinely afflicted, then you got to ask yourself, okay, is this more along the lines of a spiritual malady?
Doctor, I think that...
Good answer.
I think that one thing that we could probably assume that occurred in that instance was that seeing the priests for that pattern of time included reconciliation, recruited confession, which was probably part of her healing.
You know, she did tell me that she started receiving the sacrament, and what the priest had told her is he felt that she was cursed. And, you know, from a spiritual perspective, it makes a whole lot of sense. You know, why at a specific time of day do you start feeling these things? And he thought that somebody was putting a curse on her, or the fact that she was going to this person was causing her to have this. And sure, why not? If that's what the priest told her and she got better receiving the sacraments and nourishing her soul, I'll take it. I'll take it anytime.
Absolutely.
Hey, Dr. Luis, we're excited. We're going to have you this year at the Spiritual Warfare Conference. That's January 11, 2020. It's going to be at St. Christopher's. Yeah, we can't wait to see you there. And you'll definitely be our recurring expert every year, because we need to get also the academic side to this. And everybody there could walk away with 3 college units at every conference that you attend.
There you go.
Yeah. Let me ask you another question. I read this from Father Gabriel Morth's book. I wrote down the page. It's page 86.
86.
Thank you, Eddie. He writes this. Father Amorth writes this, and I want to get your take on it. He says, St. Padre Pio Petrolcini was convinced that many persons who were admitted to psychiatric hospitals and who remained there during their entire life were in reality possessed by the demons, and an exorcism would have been enough to cure them. This is also confirmed by the great apostle of psychiatric illnesses, the Spanish Carmelite Francis Palau. In the hospital in which he worked, he exorcised all the patients, curing many of them. This tells us something interesting. Psychiatric symptoms and diabolical symptoms assume very similar forms. What's your analysis? What's your thoughts on that paragraph from Father Amorth?
I agree. This is very true. And this goes back to your prior question, Jesse. And this is why do we have to make that distinction between the psychiatric and the possession or the spiritual affliction? Is because they can look absolutely alike. The same way that, you know, somebody who's on drugs can look like they're schizophrenic. And I can't make that distinction until either the drugs get out of the system and the symptoms calm down, or, and then if the drugs do get out of the system and the symptoms remain, then I realize, well, it wasn't just the drugs. The symptoms are still ongoing. Now they've officially been in the category of schizophrenia. It's the same thing with the spiritual world. If somebody's being spiritually afflicted, they can look depressed, they can look psychotic, they can look, you know, upset. But again, now I have to make that distinction. How do I distinguish this between, is this a psychosis, a depression, or an anxiety? But then all of a sudden there's intermittent periods of lucidity where the person is completely themselves, completely not afflicted, completely living a normal life, except for these periods where this spiritual affliction comes up, because usually spiritual affliction comes up intermittently. Then I have to recognize it can't just be mental illness, because mental illness is consistent. It's throughout. And spiritual affliction is usually intermittent.
Eddie.
Interesting. You know, Father,
he's the father of 3 kids, but
you are a father. Okay, good. I was right. Doctor, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, because, you know, different dioceses have different degrees of intake, let's call it. And so when I'm talking to somebody and you get something like that, is it the safest method to make sure that somebody is entirely off drugs before you can actually diagnose them properly? Is that the right course of action? Because I know that's what Libre Cristo does, and I'm just asking if that's probably the most safe way to do the evaluation.
No, it's a great question, because all of a sudden people might say, well, what if there is a spiritual affliction and you're not going to help them out? You're not going to treat them? That's pretty mean, right? I mean, just because they're on drugs doesn't mean that they're not spiritually afflicted as well.
Right.
So why not help them out spiritually? But you make a really good point. Yeah, absolutely. I would wait till the person's off of drugs completely, because what are you doing when you're using drugs anyway? You're opening doorways. You know, you're opening. So I'm going to try to help you out. I'm going to give you some spiritual healing. But then you're just going to erase everything that I did, or erase everything that the priest did. I should say, not me, but the priest. You're going to negate all the treatment, because you're going to go right back to the drugs and your brain's no longer going to be thinking clearly. And so even in the psychiatric realm, we wait until they're clean from drugs before we can actually even treat them for anything mental, as far as depression or anxiety. You know, we say, no, you got to go to recovery. You got to go to rehab. and get drug-free before any other healing can take place, because the drugs are going to alter you no matter what. We know that. We already know that for a fact. And so we have to get rid of all these other components. Now, some people might say, well, if they're being spiritually afflicted, isn't that an emergency? And we learned at Libra Cristo, and I learned also at Mundelein, that, you know, it's never an emergency in the sense that the person's not in a matter of physical life or death. It's not a physical emergency. If that's the case, then you got to get yourself to the hospital and get yourself safe where you're not going to hurt yourself or hurt somebody else.
Right.
You know, that obviously, if you're going to hurt yourself or you feel like you want to commit suicide, that's a definite emergency and you want to get to the emergency department. But if you're being spiritually afflicted, it's not like you don't have the elements at your disposal. You're able to pray at any time. And if you're not, you can go over to the priest in prayer. You can go to the church, or you can try to get your life in order. But if you're going to want to keep using drugs, any treatment is going to fail. It's going to be counterproductive. And that's where absolutely we always say you got to be clean from all drugs. And then depending on the drug, there's a timeline. I mean, somebody who's been using methamphetamine, I've seen plenty of patients who I've treated who have used methamphetamine. They're no longer on methamphetamine, but methamphetamine can mess with the brain so much that the person remains psychotic. And it doesn't matter if they're not having been using it for a year or two, person dependent, that they can still have symptoms of psychosis that we still need to treat. And so being clean from drugs is key and essential.
That's why the Bible says be sober 6 times in the New Testament. Hey, doctor, we're going to have to do this again. This was good. This was high information Catholic radio. Hey, get this. Send this link to all your friends and all your social media on Facebook. People need to hear this show right here. You're talking about a believing Catholic psychiatrist here that's involved in this and mental illness and the diabolical. This is a program you definitely want to you want to send it to everybody in social media. Hey, doctor, we'll have to do this again. Dr. Luis, thank you very much for your expertise.
Anytime, guys.
I got 3 college units, Eddie. What about you?
Me too. I'm ready to go and get the board on it.
It's a pleasure to be on your show. Anytime, guys. Thank
All right, dude.
You.
We'll Thank see you, doctor. You. We'll see you real soon. God bless
Take
you.
Take care. God bless.
Sounds great.
Eddie, what do you think about that, dude?
High information, man. I'm telling you, between this guy and Libra Cristo, we could. I'm telling you, you know, Jess, and this is
we're
going to
walk out of here with college degrees, Eddie.
Absolutely, Jess. Listen, this is what we needed to do is to bring people in, kind of focus on the diabolical, focus on the causes, what it can be, what it's not, what somebody comes in and makes a claim about something that it's probably not possession, it's probably something lesser than it. These are all things that we needed to explore, and I'm glad we're exploring it, and people are loving it based on the reaction.
We're going to continue bringing these guys in.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So we'll be having a lot of 3-man cars on Jesus 911. Right?
That's it. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being with us today. This Monday, we'll do the same thing tomorrow with Ruben Nava and Jess. We'll wait for that show to come on. Stay tuned for Gary Machuda, Hands On Apologetics. He'll be on shortly. So thanks again, and remember, St. Michael the Archangel, pray for us. God bless.
Amen. Just again, want to thank Eddie and Diane for their hospitality over in Fresno. God bless you guys. Thank you very much. Thank you, Christy Villa, for inviting me to the conference, the Marian Conference, and Jose Robledo. Thank you for everything that you do for me and my wife when we're on the road. God bless all you guys. Keep the faith.
St. Faustina's Prayer for Priests. O my Jesus, I beg thee on behalf of the whole Church, grant it love and the light of thy Spirit, and give power to the words of priests, so that hardened hearts might be brought to repentance and return to thee, O Lord. Lord, give us holy priests. Thou thyself maintain them in holiness. O divine and great High Priest, may the power of thy mercy accompany them everywhere, and protect them from the devil's traps and snares, which are continually being set for the souls of priests. May the power of thy mercy, O Lord, shatter and bring to naught all that might tarnish the sanctity of priests. For thou canst do all things. Amen. Virgin most powerful, pray for us.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.